from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, special podcast for Hanukkah. In addition to this podcast, we have a special Pardes Reader about Hanukkah, a series of articles about the holiday. You can download it directly from our electronic learning site. That's Elmad, E-L-M-A-D, Pardes.org. Please check it out, and while you're there, check out all of Elmad for all of our resources available to you over the net. This is also near the end of the calendar year, which means a tax year for most of us. Pardes is a small institution. Your gift goes a long way to make a difference for Pardes and make a difference for all of the students who come to Pardes to learn. You can make a tax-deductible donation online anytime at pardes.org.il. Thank you very much. This week, Hanukkah with Rabbi Rachel Berkovitz. Rabbi Berkovitz is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Rachel Berkovitz.
Hi, it's Hanukkah time again, and I want to talk to you about the Hanukkah story. Now, you may think you know the Hanukkah story. It's told to us from a historical perspective in Sefer HaMakkabim, in the Book of Maccabees, or the rabbis describe for us the beautiful miracle that happened with the Nes Pach HaShemen of the flask of oil that burned for 8 days straight. But I want to talk to you about the story that the rabbis, Chazal, tell us throughout the pages of the Gemara. Now, what's interesting is Hanukkah does not appear in the Mishnah. It's nowhere to be found in the Mishnah. There's references here or there about what the Torah reading is, but there's no tractate that focuses on it. So the main place where we see the laws of Hanukkah appears in tractate Shabbat, which overall this makes sense, because the second chapter of tractate Shabbat is B'mem Adlikim. It discusses what wicks and oils one can use to light the Shabbos candles. So if I was looking for a logical place to put the laws of the Hanukkah candles, I say, oh, candles, lighting, it all makes sense. Let's put the laws of the Hanukkah candles right here with the laws of the Shabbos candles. But what is so funny about this is that the first thing that the Gemara tells us in this discussion is, wait a second, you might have thought that I have candles with Shabbos and I have candles with Hanukkah, but actually they're totally different. There's a machloket about this, there's a dispute, but the way that we decide within the flow of the Gemara and the way we practice today is the following. That the text says, "Petilot yishmanim shamru chachamim ein madlikim behem b'shabbat, madlikim behem b'chanukah." The wicks and the oils with the rabbi said we can't light the Shabbos candles with, we can light the Hanukkah candles with. So even before you understand anything about why yes, why no, what's the difference of the oils, you see clearly that the text wants to make a distinction. Hanukkah candles are not like Shabbos candles. And what's the reason? The Mishnah opened with wicks that we're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles, because those wicks don't burn very well, and you might accidentally want to relight them, which would be a violation of Shabbat, according to the rabbis. Yet, with Hanukkah candles, we are told, this is not a problem at all. Why? Why is it not a problem? Because we're told, she'ein zakukla v'asur l'shtamesh ba'ora, that we don't actually need the light, and we can't actually use the light. So we have no worry that once I lit the candles, if it went out, that I'm going to relight them. Now, this is actually a very crazy idea when you think about it, because human beings need fire, and fire is very helpful for us. It can bring us warmth, which is mentioned with the menorah, a like bonfire that the rabbis talk about. We can use it to cook food, but mostly we use fire for light, and light brings light to the room. I don't even know if there's another word for light, right? And we want to use that light. That's why we have Shabbat candles. We have to eat dinner after nightfall. We want to not bump into anything. We want to be able to see the faces of our family members. We want shalom bayit. We want peace in the house. So we light candles so that there's light, so that we could use the light. But what's so crazy is the first thing that the Gemara tells us about Hanukkah candles is, even though we're lighting candles, don't think this is like any other candle. Don't think you're going to use the light. Don't think you're going to use the heat. No, this is something different. And we emphasize this, obviously, in the song that we sing when we light the candles, right? We say, Hanera Tolalu Kodeshem, Elana Rashut Lishtamesh Bahem, Elalirotam Bilvad, right? We say, these are holy candles. We're not going to use them. We're just going to look at them, which is a kind of funny thing, to just look at them. And this is hammered home by the text. Again, it says, don't use the Hanukkah candles to count your money, right? You might have thought, okay, I can't read a book by it, but like this, like the shadow of the light so I can see the distinction. Nope, can't use them. So obviously, and I think you understand this, is that the first thing we are learning about Hanukkah candles is they're symbolic, that they symbolize something. And the question that I want to ask is, what do they symbolize? Now you're listening and you're thinking, Rachel, hello, we know since kindergarten what they symbolize. They symbolize the miracle of the Pach HaShemen. Everyone knows that. But I would like to try to look a little deeper because I think that the Gemara here is telling a slightly different story. And throughout this text in the Mishnah, in the Gemara of Shabbos, that the rabbis tell me over and over again what this mitzvah is about. And they do that by saying, Mitzvah ner Chanukah hi, the mitzvah, the commandment, the ritual of lighting Chanukah candles is thus. Mitzvata, her mitzvah is thus. And they keep defining it and defining it. Now, of course, you will say to me, that makes sense. This is a rabbinic mitzvah. There are no verses in the Torah. So the rabbis have to really define for me what the heck I need to do. Because if I don't have them tell me, I won't know. But by defining me for me what exactly I have to do, I think they're telling me something about the essence of the mitzvah. So the first case I want to look at is also a pretty famous braita, piece of Tanakh material that you might know. And it says, Mitzvat Ner Chanukah, and then it lists three ways you can do this mitzvah of the candles. Now, the third way is probably the most famous way that you might have heard of because it's the way we do today. There's a dispute between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about both of them agree that I have to focus on the 8 days of lighting. And the question is just, do I start with 8 and light downwards? On the first day, light 8 candles, then 7, 6, that's Beit Shammai. Or do we do what we do today, that on the first day, I light 1, 2, 3, up to 8? And that view, despite their technical differences, which in another class you could discuss, or in another podcast you could discuss, it's clear that that is focused to a certain extent on the famous story of the Pach HaShemen, right? On the famous story of the flask, because the miracle of the flask was that it lasted 8 days. And here we have an emphasis, I want you to understand that another day has passed, and another day has passed, and another day has passed. But I want to focus on the first two reasons given in the Braita, because I think they're quite interesting, and they get a little bit lost in the story. So our text actually says, Mitzvah ner Chanukah, ner ish ubeito. How do I do the mitzvah? I light one candle for every household, for every person and their home. Huh, interesting. And then the text says, Mehadrin, what's an even better way to do it? Ner l'kol achad ve'achad. I should light a candle for every single person in the household. So you would like walk through the streets and you'd see one window would have, or one outside their house, they'd have 2 lights, and a different house would have 3 lights, and another one might have 7 lights. And these would not reflect the days of Chanukah in any way, shape, or form, but would reflect something about the people. It would be linked to either the household itself, if you're just seeing 1, 1, 1, or the individual people inside them, which is seems like pointing me in a slightly different direction of how to think about the light and how to think about the candle, right? It a little bit reminds me of the verse from Mishle that says, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam, right? The candle of God is the soul of human beings, that each light reflects a human being. That's a powerful idea. Is it the life force? Is it the godliness in each person? But it's sort of sending me in a different direction. So I want you to hold that idea for a second. And then we're going to look at some other things that the rabbis say that seem quite interesting about how to do this mitzvah. So another thing they tell us is what time we should do the mitzvah. It says mitzvata mishitishka hachama. Its time period of the mitzvah is from when the sun sets ad she tichale regel min hashuk, until the last leg, the last person is gone from the marketplace. Huh, interesting, right? Here we also have something focused on people. There are people in the marketplace. It seems clear, and you might say, oh, this is also obvious. I need people to see this light. There's something about the relationship between the light and the people seeing it. The text also discusses the location. Where should I place these Hanukkah candles? And the text says, Ner Hanukkah mitzvata laniach al petach beito mibachutz. The mitzvah is to put it at the opening of your house, on the outside. Ve'im dar ba'aliyah, and if you live not on the first floor, minicha b'chalon hasmucha l'reshut harabim. You should put it in your window that's next to the public domain. Okay, this seems to fit with the message I've been getting, that somehow the people outside need to be able to see or link are linked in some way to my Hanukkah candles. I need to have them outside my house, and I need to have them facing the Reshut HaRabim. They need to be put in the public domain. And what's interesting about this statement of putting in the public domain is that the Gemara in Shabbos actually very much emphasizes this idea. It brings a Mishnah from Baba Kama that says, you know what? The differences between inside your house and outside your house have significance when it comes to damages. Let's say I'm a camel owner and my camel's carrying a whole bundle of flax, and I'm walking by a shop owner and a spark that from inside his shop comes out of his shop, flies out of his shop and lights the flax on fire, and I lose my load. Well, that obviously is the store owner's fault, because he was doing something in his house that affected what happened outside his house. Or what's the alternative? What if I have a camel and the flax falls off my camel and it rolls inside the shop and hits his lamp that he is inside and there's a fire inside? Well, then it's my responsibility, because I was supposed to be on the outside domain and somehow I crossed the boundary and affected the inside domain. That's what the Mishnah says. And then Rabbi Yehuda comes in the Mishnah and says, B'ner Hanukkah Patur. But if the shopkeeper put his lights outside his shop, his Hanukkah lights outside his shop, and the same type of accident happened, my flax fell and it got burnt, he doesn't have to pay. He's not responsible. Even though normally we would say, wait, it was in the public domain, I was perfectly fine, what are you doing putting your private lights in the public domain? When it comes to Ner Hanukkah, we want the private light, to a certain extent, to be in the public domain. And I would say even more so, this gets hammered home very interestingly with a funny halacha that is told to us in the Gemara that says that Ner Shel Hanukkah sheinicha lamala me'esrim amah psula kisuka ukemabui. If you put your Ner Hanukkah too high, if it's 20 amah, amah is like from your elbow to the end of your hand, 20 amah high, it's pasul, it's not eligible, it doesn't count. And then it says, just like with sukkah, the mitzvah of sukkah, and just like with a alleyway, with the laws of creating an eruv in an alleyway. What's going on here? So usually the rabbis like to link together different halachot if they say that there's something unifying in the examples, right? So you can say on a very simple idea, the whole purpose is to be able to see the Hanukkah candles. You want to see the schach and the sukkah. You want to know that there's an eruv, so you want to see this beam. So if you put it way too high up, it's not in eye vision. Right? I think that's the simple level. But I think there's also a deeper level of linking Ner Hanukkah to these two other examples. Because what's interesting about these two other examples is that the mitzvah of sukkah is to take your home that's on the outside, that's on the inside, and move it outside, right? That's where you take this, your permanent home, and you go out into the field or outside and you make your sukkah. So it's a moving from the inside out. And the same thing with the concept of Eruv to a certain extent. What is an Eruv? It takes one domain and you have a private domain in which you can carry on Shabbat, and then you make the public domain into your private domain. You take what was inside out. So now we see that there's some theme running through Hanukkah candles about moving the in to the out for people to see, that I'm trying to unpack here what's going on. Okay, so let's look at one other mitzvah before we try to say an idea. One other aspect of this mitzvah, and that is not only am I supposed to be putting my Hanukkah candles, mi b'chutz, outside the opening of my door, the Gemara says, hecha manichle, where exactly should I place it outside my door? Like telling me outside my door wasn't enough. And we follow the rule that says you have to place it on the left. And the Gemara actually specifically says, this is the halacha, you should place it on the left side of your door. And so why is that significant? Why do we need to do that? What is going on here that there is, it seems like there's a clear dividing line between my house, there's the Petach, the opening, and then there's the Reshut HaRabim, the public. And I'm putting the Chanukah candles right on that dividing line. It's understood that it's connected to my home. I'm the one doing it. And it's somehow reflective of my home, of the people in my home. But yet it's on this outside line on the outside. So what is the Gemara trying to tell us about Chanukah? So as you already know, obviously, there is a link between these candles and the Beit HaMikdash. Right from the famous story of that the miracle after the Yevanim came and desecrated, the Greeks came and desecrated the temple, and we won the war, and we come back, and boom, we can't find any pure oil, and then only one is found, and a miracle happens. But that there's clearly that these lights are somehow modeled on the Mikdash, and we see this reflected in the text. That story is told in this text in the Gemara and Shabbat. By the way, I encourage you to sit down and learn these pages in Masechet Shabbat. I think you'll gain a lot from it. Another statement that's made here is that Shemen Zayit Min HaMuchar, the best way to light Chanukah candles is with olive oil. And that, of course, is what the menorah, what the candelabra in the temple was lit with. And so what's interesting about all this is that if you look in the Torah, in Sefer Vayikra, Perek Kaf Daled 24 Gimel, it actually tells you where the menorah is placed. It says, Michutz laparochet ha'idut, ba'ol mo'ed, yarech oto aron. It's michutz, like we had michutz lapetach habayit. It's michutz laparochet, right? So the way the temple is built, there's Kodesh Kodoshim, the Holy of Holies, where the Aron Eidut, where the Ark of Testament, that the Luchot, the Luchot Abrit, where the tablets, where the Ten Commandments were written, are placed in the Aron. And that's the Holy of Holies. And then there's a curtain that divides the Parochet. And then directly outside this Parochet, we have the Menorah. There's the Menorah. And in fact, the menorah is placed, if you look up a diagram of the Beit HaMikdash, which I recommend you do, based on other psukim, it's considered to be on the south side of the Mikdash. So if you're facing the Kodesh Kedoshim, if you're facing the Holy of Holies, the south side happens to be, guess what? The left side. So there seems to be a lineup in this discussion between our bayit, our home, the dividing Petach line, and then the chutz going out to the Reshut HaRabim, to the public domain, where the Chanukah candles are on the left, and the description of the temple where I have the Holy of Holies, the dividing line of the Parochet, and then the candelabra michutz on the left. And what's very, very interesting in the flow of the Gemara is in the midst of this story of Chanukah, the Gemara brings this very, very same pasuk about michutz laparochet, of where the candelabra is. And the Gemara asks a very interesting question. And it says, V'chi l'orahu tzarich? Does Hashem need the light? Right? Why are we putting a candelabra there? Does God need light to see what God is doing? Obviously, the answer is no. But what's interesting is the proof text for this of how do we know that God doesn't need light? It says, V'halo kol arba'im shana shalchu b'nei Yisrael b'bibar lo hachu ele la'oro. Right? Wasn't it all 40 years in the desert when Bnei Israel was wandering? How did they walk? How did they know where to go? We followed the pillar, the Amud HaEsh, the pillar of fire at night. Right? So God is light. God manifests God's self in the world through light. Obviously, God doesn't need light, right? The divine is light. Hashem is light. Okay, so if that's the case, the Gemara says, so why do we need this candelabra here? And then the Gemara says a fascinating thing. It says, Ela eduti levaye olam shashchina shora b'Yisrael. It is a testament, and I think there's a play in the pasuk, right? It says, Michutz laparochet ha'edut, right? The parochet ha'edut was the parochet of the testament referring to the Aron, the Aron HaEdut. But here they're reading the Pasuk as outside the Parochet as testament. That is why Aron is placing it. So what is it a testament to? It's a testament to the fact that the Shekhinah resides with Israel. And in fact, it seems to be a testament levaye olam to the entire world that the Shekhinah resides with Israel. And so now we have something very, very interesting. We have a very interesting idea being told to us about Hanukkah candles. Because when we're putting the Hanukkah candles out where the public can see it, and we're putting them, if you live in a place where you can literally put them outside your door on the left, you're actually recreating the idea to show the world that God resides with Israel. And I think now we can understand the miracle of the Pach HaShemen a little bit more, right? A little bit more. It's not a technical thing. Oh, you know, in some ways the level we understood it when we learned it in kindergarten. Oh, we needed the oil. There wasn't oil. It burned for 7 days. Miracle happened. But rather, it is a reflection of the entire miracle of the whole story. You could even include the miracle of the military victory in this, I think. If you look at the psukim about the candelabra, there's an idea that it was supposed to be a ner tamid, that it was continuously supposed to burn, right? And our Gemara here asks, how was it a light unto the nations? How was it a testament to the nations? And it says that very idea, that there was one flame that always burned in the candelabra. And so when they relit it and it continued to burn straight constantly without stopping, right, and to emphasize for us that it was burning without stopping, is a reaffirmment of this idea that God is testifying that God is with the Jewish people. And you could read that the whole military victory was a testament of God being with the Jewish people. And so I'm going to add one more thought, and I won't flesh it out completely. You can think about this. In the end of this section in the Gemara, the rabbis are very, very conscious of the idea that Hanukkah is a mitzvah derabanan. It's a mitzvah that's not written in the Torah. It's a new event that happened that the rabbis choose to recognize by doing ritual. And they themselves ask the question, like, how can we say the blessing on lighting the candles, which says, Vitzivane, that you commanded us, right? And there's a clear consciousness that this is different. This act is something that is the rabbis enacting Torah and mitzvot in the world that is different than what is written in the Torah. And I think that that sort of self consciousness about what they're doing is linked to this whole very idea. Because what I think that they are saying is that one of the main ways the divine reveals that the divine is still in the midst of Israel is through the Jewish people commitment to Torah and mitzvot, to the unfolding body of revelation that is continuously happening throughout the generations of looking and seeking the divine in this world. And so when you light Hanukkah candles this year, no matter where you place them, but if you remember that these candles are not candles to be used to light, but they are candles of symbolism, symbolism that we're placing to show the world that God resides with the Jewish people, and that we take our home, which is the model of the Kodesh Kedoshim, and Kodesh Kedoshim is where the Torah was found, our home where normally maybe our mitzvah observance is something more private. And then this depends on, I think it's true for any level of mitzvah observance, that a lot of times this is things we do in private. People in our workplace might not know what we do or how we live our lives. These things you do in your home or maybe in the privacy of your community. But the symbol of Hanukkah, and I think to some extent, at least in America, I saw this, like it was everywhere. You had your Christmas tree and your Hanukkah candles. It was a symbol that was said to the outside world of a definition of what it means to be part of the Jewish people. And it was a symbol of stating this light is the light of the divine, is the light of the Torah. And throughout the generations, it always resides with us.
Hanukkah Sameach. Happy Hanukkah to you all.
Thank you, Rabbi Berkowitz. Thanks for tuning in. And we're going to have another episode of Pardes from Jerusalem coming right up for this Shabbat's Parsha. Check it out, and we'll see you soon. Thanks very much.